Live and worldwide from a windowless bunker at an undisclosed location in the rural, wild Mountain West in the occupied states of America. I am your host, Michael W. Dean, the Iron Hamster, broadcasting from, you don't even need to know where. So one of the square states between, like, I don't know, somewhere between Nevada and North Dakota and Montana. Let's say that. And Mr. Dobby Barker from the People's Republic of California stand, unfortunately.
I got myself a new t-shirt that is, it is the California flag, except the bear is being decapitated and it says the Zombie Republic.
I like that. I like that. And we have a special guest here tonight. We're taking her out for a test spin as a third wheel to, she doesn't even know this yet. We're trying her out to see if she wants to be a regular co-host. That's news to her.
Surprise. It's an interview.
It's an intervention. Right. It's a radio intervention. Yes. You're not doing radio. You need to. And we are your loved ones and we're going to gather around you and tell you. I'm burying the lead. We got to give her name first. It's MK Lords. Are you there?
Yes, I'm here. Thanks for having me.
Thanks
for being contacted by the government.
Thanks for being had. She is broadcasting from Florida, and we're on a bunch of stations in Florida now. What do you do? What are the things you do? What are you known for?
Well, I'm the editor at Bitcoin Not Bombs. I work with Davi and Drew there. I've written for Bitcoin Magazine and Attack the System and a few other sites. I kind of write mostly about Bitcoin, and I've organized a couple Bitcoin conferences too. So I also do a weekly show about Bitcoin. It's called Crypto. Well, it's not really about Bitcoin. It's about all things crypto, called Crypto Convos, every Wednesday. So
your audio sounds a lot better than it used to. How come?
Thanks to you, Michael Dean, for helping me get my sound right with this awesome microphone suggestion. And you really helped me out with this. So I was using a Yeti before, which I know you're not really fond of, but so I switched over, and thank you for that.
Yeah, man. I found this this amazing new podcast that I'm not going to talk about until I am done helping them get their audio better. You know, I do that for pay sometimes, but sometimes I find a podcast that I like so much that I'm like, man, these people are great and they sound horrible and they wouldn't even have to spend any money to sound really good. I'm going to write them and say, you know, for selfish purposes, I could pretend it's from altruism. It's more like I want to listen to their podcast regularly, but I can't stand the audio. There is a podcast I discovered that is the only straight up ANCAP libertarian podcast in the country of Scotland, and which is an incredibly socialist country. And it's a couple, and they're like really just a darling, totally in love, head over heels, young hipster couple in Scotland with the best Scottish accents ever. And I'm going to groom them over the next couple days.
That's awesome.
Yeah. They're sharing a mic and it's worse than the Yeti, but I'm going to get them better even without buying new equipment. It's a challenge, man. So there will soon be, you soon will all be able to hear a great Scottish couples ANCAP libertarian cast. So I want to welcome a new station tonight. This is kind of, we have just been burning up the airwaves, adding stations. I would like to welcome, good evening, Gilbert, Arizona, welcoming where the Freedom Fiends are now welcoming tonight. Talk Radio 1620 AM in Gilbert, Arizona, playing us 7 days a week live. And it is a this is a Part 15 station, and I want to talk a little bit about Part 15 radio because it's something everybody who listens to The Fiend should be doing to fill in the gaps of where we're not. Part 15 radio is now Part 15 basically refers to a section of the FCC rules, which sounds kind of square, but basically it's the ability to have a radio station on AM, I think also FM, without a license and actually reaching, you know, about a, you know, between a half mile and a 2 mile radius, depending on how you, what equipment you use, how you tune it, how high your antenna is, what the topography is in your neighborhood. You know, and Part 15 is actually what covers the fact that, like, your garage door opener can work over a radio frequency without a license, but it can be used for broadcast radio as long as it doesn't interfere with somebody else, as long as there's no cussing. There's a few other rules, but it's a really cool thing to check out. What do you guys think?
I like the idea of something that is both legal and doesn't require a license.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's really interesting. How'd you find out about that?
I've known about this for a long time. I actually built a 100 milliwatt transmitter when I was 12 because I've wanted to be on radio forever. I'm 50 now and I'm on radio every day. But when I was 12, I built a little FM transmitter into the handset of an old telephone. And it broadcast, I mean, this is before they had like the Mr. Microphones, and it broadcast like maybe 100 yards tops, and it did work. I tried it out, but it was like, I had no idea if anyone ever heard me, but I'd walk around my neighborhood like doing a radio show when I was 12 into a headset, and my neighbors thought I was crazy. They were like, oh, there's that Dean kid talking into a broken telephone again. But it was more like the fact that it could be heard by somebody that mattered. And Part 15 kind of has this like wrong reputation as, you know, the most powerful station in the tri-yard area. But you can actually reach, you know, in a metropolitan area with a radius of a mile. I mean, you have a potential audience of tens of thousands of people. And
it can be done.
Yeah, I'll put some links in the show notes tonight. And this station does it really well. There's some people that don't really do it right, but they're doing it well with like scheduled, you know, like a real radio, like a commercial radio station. No, they are a real radio station, but like a commercial station where they have, you know, a show clock and automation and scheduled shows at certain times. And the guy who runs it does a call-in show once a week himself. And they have a streaming link. And the streaming link sounds incredibly good. They're playing Free Talk Live, too. And I listen to Free Talk Live on KTFL in Gilbert, Arizona's streaming link tonight. And it sounded like as good as, you know, the LRN or GCN link. I mean, it was really, really solid. And that's hard to do with re-linking a link. He might be taking it down from satellite. But, yeah, man, Part 15 radio, just Google that and start looking for stuff. I mean, you can start a Part 15 radio transmitter. I mean, you can buy a kit for like $50. You got to make sure you put a filter in it. Otherwise, you're going to step on other frequencies. But, and, you know, you have to get antennas built of bought of a certain length and height and base to correspond to the frequency you're using. You have to use a frequency that's not being used. And you can't cuss. And other than that, like literally, you could start a radio station and cover, you know, part of a small town for a couple $100 or, you know, under $1,000. I mean, if you want to spend, you know, $1,000 or so, you can get the Procaster already built with the antenna and everything, and it goes up on a pole. And yeah, man, you can reach the world. You can reach a big chunk of a small town or a small chunk of a big town with Part 15 pretty well. And it's a really fun hobby to do. I recommend it.
Nice. I'll have Groovy. To look into that.
Yeah, man. So, Davi, long time no meow. How are you?
I'm doing really well.
Oh, I have a required notice I have to read here once an hour because we are on talk radio. Obama is a liar. He's a socialist and his feet stink. Just in case anyone wonders where we're coming from. Okay. Because, you know, we forget to talk about politics because life is so fun. Otherwise, we don't want to talk about all the tyranny all the time. But he is a horrible person and all his ilk and all politicians are horrible. And election season's coming up. So get out there and don't not vote harder than you did vote not before because things might change in a different non-direction and bring the country in a different horrible direction. It's time for that.
There you go.
So, Davi, what did you do in the interim from when I last talked to you?
I just got back from Walker Stalker Con in Atlanta, which was a whole lot of fun.
I don't know what that is. Is that like everybody who's into Walker Texas Ranger goes there?
No. No, nothing like that at all. Walker Stalker Con is the first of its kind.
It's people who stalk the guy who is the actor in Walker Texas Ranger, right?
There you go. You hit the nail.
That was what's his name? That was the toughest guy in the world. What's his name?
No, it's a Chuck zombie Norris. Convention.
Chuck Norris. It's people who stalk Chuck Norris.
I wouldn't want to stalk him. That sounds scary. That sounds like a bad decision.
His tears cure cancer. I've heard too. I'm sorry. I will stop. Tell us in detail for the next two segments, please, about Walker Stalker Con.
Yeah, so it's a zombie convention. It's based, it was begun by a group called the Walker Stalker Podcast, which sort of focuses on zombie-related media. And then one year they just sort of decided, let's throw a little event in Atlanta where Walking Dead is filmed. And then sort of without you know, before they knew it, the entire cast of Walking Dead was like, we want to come and we want to participate. And then suddenly it was like a huge event. And so this is the second annual one. It's twice the size it was last year. They were expecting 2,000 people. They got 3,000 people. And it was just a huge event. And it was a fun time had by all. I was on an ethics panel,
which is really cool.
A zombie ethics panel. This is something that's sort of different. Like, most fan conventions have panels of actors and things like that. And this convention has that too. But they also have philosophy panels and ethics panels because there's something about zombie fans and the zombie genre that focuses on raising ethical dilemmas. And so the audience and the fan base, because the whole idea,
The basic dilemma, and I don't even know much about zombies, is, you know, do you shoot your loved ones to keep them from eating everybody and turning everyone into zombies once they turn into zombies? Is it stuff like that?
Well, so that's the first one, but there's a whole lot of other ethical dilemmas that happen. Like even once you like take zombies out of the question, is it okay to kill one if it saves five, for example? Or, you know, at what point are you hungry enough to steal a loaf of bread? Or, you know, how human are they and why are they a lot of it is literary. Like, why are zombies fascinating to people? And what is the appeal of a not quite human character as a social commentary? And we had a great discussion. It was me and two professors from Emory University and, you know, great feedback from the audience, great questions from the audience. I had a table where I was selling Survivor Max, which is my zombie novel, and I sold out, which is great.
Wow.
And lots of fun.
You had some fiends pins too, didn't you?
I had some fiend buttons, and you know, people asked about that. And the so one of the things I did was on my table to collect emails, I had a prize wheel, and I essentially said, you know, free spin, everybody wins. Give me your email address, spin the wheel, and you win whatever it lands on. And half of the wheel was candy, but the rest of them were sort of zombie-related prizes. And one of them was buttons, and I was giving out the Pork Scouts buttons that we brainstormed here on the air. And so I also had the Freedom Fiends buttons, and a lot of people chose the State Speeches Hate Speech button, and that just like warms my heart that I'm like at this mainstream event. It's not a collection of libertarians, but they see that button, they get it right away, and they're like, I want that button now. And
MK, do you have a State Speeches Hate Speech button?
I don't have one of those, but I need to get one now. I have a few other buttons.
We'll have our assistant get your address after the show, and we'll send that right out to you immediately.
Freedom Fiends with Michael Dean. This is what radio sounds like now.
Love the Fiends and want to help out? We do take donations and we put them back into our Liberty Projects. You can make a donation by clicking on the spinning coin on any post. But what if you want to help, but you ain't got no cash? Or you made a donation and you want to help more? Here's how you can help. Download and seed our torrents to help keep us drone-proof. There's a Torrent Club link at the top of freedomfiends.com. You can also blog the Fiends and share episode links on Facebook, Twitter, and elsewhere. You can rate and review our movies on Amazon and IMDb. You can rate and review the Freedom Fiends and our songs on iTunes. That really helps a lot. You can buy our movies and share them with friends or give them out as gifts. And one of the best ways to spread liberty is to buy a bunch of Freedom Fiends buttons and give them out as gifts. Wholesale prices are available, and you can also comment on our site, or better yet, comment about us on other sites. And please email the site link to all your friends. Thanks for helping spread the Fiends message worldwide to as many Liberty people as you can, especially to those who don't yet get it. You rock.
Hello, this is MK Lords. I am the test third wheel tonight, I guess. So, you're great to be back.
You're the actual third wheel. It's not a test, but you're testing to see if it all fits to have you come back more. And, you know, I'm liking it so far. So, Davi, you're into zombies. You're an adult and you don't have any children. Do you go trick-or-treating?
No.
I'm not saying like that'd be a bad thing. I just wondered. It seems, is Halloween one of your favorite days of the year?
It was growing up. I'm into costuming. Like, I wore a costume to this convention.
I saw.
But now I don't really do Halloween anymore. That's, you know, that's when normal people wear costumes. I like to put together costumes for other days.
You know, there's a Dead Kennedy song called Halloween that's basically about how square people get all wild one day of the year. And the chorus of it is, why not every day? Are you so afraid? What would people say?
Yeah, I can subscribe to that philosophy. Absolutely.
Cool.
I feel like that's kind of why I don't dress up for Halloween too sometimes, because I do the hoop dance thing and I already get to wear crazy costumes for my performances. So I haven't done the Halloween thing in a while. I like to be able to wear crazy costumes whenever I want. So
what's hoop dance?
So it's a lot of people are familiar with hula hoops, which is, you know, hula hoops came out in probably like the 50s or so. And it's, people think of it mostly as hooping on your waist and on your hips and stuff like that. But there's actually a whole dance form that kind of morphed out of the hooping culture, probably in the, I would say, early 1990s or so. It was kind of started in like the jam band scene. So people started actually dancing with hoops and incorporating different forms of dance, like jazz or ballet, or even there's like gymnast hoops. There's, I mean, it's really expanded to a whole different, I mean, a whole bunch of different types of hooping. But I kind of combine a lot of like jazz dance and stuff with the type of hooping that I do. And you can also set them on fire too. So I do a lot of fire dancing, which is really fun. It looks scarier than it is. A lot of people say, oh, fire. I mean, I don't know. It seems really, really scary, but it's not too bad. You know, once you get really comfortable with the hoop, it's kind of like a part of your body, I guess. I don't know. It's not as dangerous as it seems, and it's really fun too. So that's kind of like, I started hoop dancing as kind of like an agorist side job thing when I was serving tables about 6 years ago or so, like 5 or 6 years ago.
Like you were hooping while you were serving tables?
Okay. it was my side job. So like with serving tables,
I see.
Like my regular job. And then like I would perform with like DJs and stuff. On the weekends.
Davi, would zombies be afraid of hoop dancing with fire?
So, yeah, this is something I'm thinking about doing is a periodic table or taxonomical chart of zombies, because there's all different kinds of zombies. So, like, the Romero zombies were, in the original Night of the Living Dead, were afraid of fire. But the Walking Dead zombies, as in the sort of the new TV show and a number of the movies that were not done by Romero, zombies are actually attracted to fire. And so this is sort of a difference of opinion on the sort of form of them or whatever. So I would say they would react to it the same as they would with any kind of fire. If they're attracted to fire, they'll go towards the hoop. And if they're afraid of it, they'll run away from it.
Do you ever see the Simpsons where a scream-a-pillar takes up residence in the Simpsons backyard and the EPA comes in and protects it?
What's a scream-a-pillar?
It's a caterpillar. It's a large caterpillar that just screams 24 hours a day, like as loud as a human screaming.
That sounds really unpleasant.
It's endangered. It's endangered. And the EPA guy gives Lisa a pamphlet like, so your life is ruined. Like, you know, a scream-a-pillar has moved in and your house has become, your land has become protected by the EPA. Lisa's reading the pamphlet. She says, without constant reassurance, it will die. It's sexually attracted to fire. Dad, are you sure that God doesn't want this to go extinct? Sexually attracted to fire. That's not a good thing for a bug.
No. So, and she was, wasn't she supposed to be more of like the environmentalist kind of character of the show too?
She was. But the EPA is the enemy in the Simpsons movie. They kind of expanded on that one.
Right.
Yeah, it's a takeoff on the Dome story and show, the Stephen King one.
Under the Dome.
Yeah, where the EPA puts a dome over Springfield because it's so toxic, it's ruining the rest of the world.
Mm-hmm.
Groovy. I want to say something else about the first zombie movie, or first zombie book. So I would argue Frankenstein is a zombie just in the sense that he is a resurrected or reanimated dead tissue. But the canon is that I Am Legend is the first zombie novel. And I guess I'll explain why that is after we get back from the break.
Cool, man. Mm. Zombies. Obama's a zombie, I think.
He is, absolutely. And I'll explain why.
Okay. Freedom Fiends.
You're listening to Freedom Fiends with Michael Dean and some of his weird friends. And yes, we're broadcasting this into space.
This show survives on donations from fiends like you. We put that money back into our show and Liberty Outreach and donate most of our ad space to Liberty organizations that make a difference. We're also a teaching hospital, educating the next generation of Liberty Talkers on the skills needed to keep the radio flame of truth burning into the future. Put your money where your heart is and make a donation of any amount to the Freedom Fiends. Please go to freedomfiends.com and click on the spinning coin on any post.
Are you tired of your taxes funding endless occupations around the world? Antiwar.com is run by people who understand that wars abroad become wars at home, wars on our freedoms. Antiwar.com is dedicated to bringing you the latest in news, views, interviews, and reviews from the top movers and shakers in the anti-occupation movement. Antiwar.com has it all, from thorough foreign policy analysis to interviews with whistleblowers who used to run the military-industrial complex. Antiwar, pro-free market. That's antiwar.com.
Hello, meow, and welcome to Freedom Fiends. This is not your grandpa's radio. I'm MK Lords, and we're back.
Yeah,
this talk is about zombies.
This is Michael Dean, and I'm just board hopping for Davi Barker because he's the real zombie expert here. So, Davi,
yeah, let me pay the hook.
Yeah, go ahead.
So, I Am Legend is actually not about zombies; it's about vampires. The movie sort of makes it more like zombies, but the original book called them vampires. But it's considered by sort of most zombie fans to be the first novel about zombies, even though Frankenstein is more physiologically like a zombie and he comes earlier. That book is older than I Am Legend. But the reason is it's an aesthetic decision, and it's because the defining characteristic of a zombie is actually that the monsters outnumber the survivors. And so I argue that really what we're talking about when we talk about zombies is a metaphor for democracy itself. And Richard Matheson even confirms this in I Am Legend. When he first describes the monsters, he says, "Of course they resort to violence. They've been denied the voting franchise." And so, like, really what zombies are they are the hordes, the masses, the sheeple who are willing to live at the expense of others because they outnumber them. And so really the popularity of zombies as a genre is because people have a latent fear of democracy. They realize that it's not working. They realize that it's cannibalistic, that it's a collapse scenario.
I got it. I got the show title. Democracy. Democracy is 51 zombies and 49 town folk deciding what to have for dinner. So why is Obama a zombie?
Because he's sort of like he's the lich. Do you know what a lich is?
No.
So in the voodoo taxonomical class of zombies, there is a controller of the herd, and that's what he is. He's the one who sort of has captured the minds of the masses and sort of decides what they do and don't do, and controls their appetites. So he's the master zombie. He's the head zombie, and that's a lich. So yeah,
is it
metaphorically speaking?
How do you spell lich?
I'm not suggesting he's supernatural or anything.
No. he's not an African Muslim zombie. He's a I think he's from Hawaii, but
he's just a straight good old fashioned democratic zombie. That's what he is.
He's just a he's a secular humanist. And that's, you know, on talk radio, that's generally a dirty word, calling someone a secular humanist. Not all secular humanists are evil. Mark Twain was a secular humanist. But what makes secular humanists evil is when they want you to worship them as the human.
Yeah. Well, this is, again, why zombies and ethics overlap so much, is because the majoritarian ethic that democratic societies are based upon are completely obeyed by the zombie horde. And so they throw into question that sort of categorical ethic of the majority is correct, and that that being in the majority justifies violence. Because if democracy justifies violence, then the zombies are the heroes of these movies.
Yeah, that's true.
And I like what you said earlier about different zombie types, because that's really important if you're talking about ethics in general. For instance, if you consider Frankenstein, the monster in, you know, the original Frankenstein book to be a zombie, then, you know, we're talking about different ethical situations than, you know, I'm Legend zombies or Night of the Living Dead zombies, who are less cognizant and, you know, don't have that kind of coherence with them. So
right, because in Frankenstein, the aesthetic is that the townspeople are the zombies, and he is the individual. He is the minority, right? And so he's the oppressed class, and that's really what makes Frankenstein a fantastic book, is that the monster is the oppressed.
You know what?
And that's a different motif than most zombie stories.
You know, what the monster's name is, right?
You know what's that, Michael?
You know what the monster's name is in Frankenstein?
Isn't it just monster?
Yeah, well, people don't.
It's the monster.
Yeah, it's not Frankenstein. Frankenstein's the guy that created it. But mm-hmm. a lot of people don't know that. But it's referred to by several words, including creature, monster, fiend, wretch, vile insect, a vile insect, demon, spelled D-A-E-M-O-N, being, and it.
Crazy.
And it's so sad. This is one of my favorite books, too. It's so sad how you hear Frankenstein, the creator, talking about his creation in that way when he says such awesome things. I just happen to have the book in front of me. Do you mind if I read just a brief
section here?
Read a passage from great literature, please, MK.
Yes, excellent. So, I lay on my straw, but I could not sleep. I thought of the occurrences of the day. What chiefly struck me was the gentle manners of these people, and I longed to join them, but dared not. I remember too well the treatment I had suffered the night before from the barbarous villagers, and I resolved, whatever course of conduct I might hereafter think it right to pursue, that for the present I would remain quietly in my hovel, watching and endeavoring to discover the motives which influence their actions. And he's just so observant the whole time throughout the book. I mean, it's
almost
really
Stranger
great.
In a Strange Land.
It's actually very similar to Stranger in a Strange Land. He's really thrown into this environment. He has no way of coping with it because his creator completely rejects him.
You know, I actually read Stranger in a Strange Land in the hospital it takes place in.
Wow, that's weird.
Yeah, I was a paid drug guinea pig. Well, it's in the same complex. Actually, he's taken to I think where the vice president lives, in the Army or the Naval Hospital Observatory Hospital area of in Maryland, whatever it's called, I forget. But I was in that hospital complex being given a drug called anti-steroids, which I've never heard of since. So I guess they didn't pass the test, and maybe that's why I'm short. I don't know.
You know what, though? The moral of all of these stories, even though the monsters are different, is the same. And that's the triumph of the individual over the collective. Because, mm-hmm. fundamentally, the Frankenstein monster is the hero because his rights are violated by the majority. And the moral of all of these is that the majority is often wrong.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Yeah.
Which is also why democratic societies and Obama fails.
Yeah. Don't you have a book, Davi, that you wrote about zombies where the zombies outnumber the survivors?
Oh, yeah. Well, Survivor Max. Absolutely. I mean, it's Max is an individual. He is one, and he's against his entire apartment complex, which is all zombies. And so, yeah, it is the individual versus the collective.
Are they statists, the zombies?
Yeah. So this is my contribution to the genre of zombies. There's this dilemma in the genre of how smart are zombies? Are they fast or slow? Do they speak or not, et cetera? And people argue about this, and they have their favorite zombie that they claim is the real one. And so I argue
Kind of like voting.
Yeah. Well, it's more like free market voting, because it's which movies will you pay for and which books will you pay for. But I argue that both can exist with the same disease. And what I suggest is that the mind of the human affects the outcome of the infection. So if you have a more aggressive mind, meaning the architecture of your brain is actually different than that of a peaceful person, then the virus is more at home in your mind. And so a statist becomes a more dangerous zombie than the average person. So, for example, the shambler of Night of the Living Dead is your average civilian who maybe, you know, accepts violence but doesn't engage in it on a regular basis. But the soldier or the police officer or the, you know, criminal perhaps who has aggressive physical tendencies becomes a more dangerous zombie. And this is even this has never really been stated in any zombie movie I'm aware of, but it is consistent with the original Romero movies because, for example, Bub is this zombie who's part of an experiment, and it's discovered that he's sort of intelligent and he can sort of learn how to do certain things. Like he can start a tape player and he learns to hold a pistol and look at a book, although he can't read. And then it's discovered he knows how to salute. And so he was a soldier, right? And so he is different than the other zombies because a more aggressive brain is more welcoming of the virus.
Don't cops get eaten a lot, especially Southern cops in zombie books and movies?
Yeah.
It seems like there's always a Southern cop, and they're generally like kind of good natured, but kind of simple. And, I guess that's the trope. Maybe they don't get eaten.
Well, often the government or the police or whatever is the human bad guy. So if the zombies are sort of seen as a force of nature out in the world, the villain is often a police officer or a government agent of some kind. And this is true in my book too. In my book, it's the postman. But once the threat of zombies is sort of mitigated, then it becomes about human interaction and it becomes about the savagery of people in a state of nature. And you always see the same tendencies. You see those aggressive people, especially those people who were previously employees of the state, sort of become tyrants in the zombie apocalypse. And that's all I have to say about that. Walking Dead is a great example. There are two police officers in the beginning of the story. There's Shane and Rick. And it's a sort of good cop, bad cop scenario. And Shane is the one who, like, he believes the government is going to come and help them. And he wants to go to the military base where he thinks there'll be protection. And Rick is the one who takes off his badge and accepts the new reality and learns to live in the new reality. And he's also the one that acknowledges and respects property rights. He's the one who does not want to murder innocent people, whereas Shane wants to murder innocent people out of caution. And so it is very clear that the person with the most sort of respect for the authority of the state or faith in the state is the one who turns out to be the evil character or the bad cop in the scenario.
Nice. MK?
Yeah, you know, I haven't really watched a whole lot of Walking Dead episodes, but that's an interesting, it's very interesting and kind of cool theme there. So there's no one left. Those are the only two cops left. Kind of describe, how does Walking Dead start? I'm really unfamiliar with it. I saw like part of one episode and it kind of creeped me out a little bit and I couldn't finish watching it.
I don't think they're the only two cops left, but they're the main characters in the first and second season, really. And they're both police officers. They were partners before the outbreak. And so it's about the de-evolution of their relationship as friends. So I guess Walking Dead begins. Rick gets shot and he's in a coma for a little while. And when he wakes up, the world has fallen apart. And he seems like he's like the last man on Earth for the first episode. But then he sort of reconnects with other survivors. And it's a whole human drama at that point. It's about he and Shane disagreeing about the proper path to safety for the group of survivors that they're in. And the biggest contribution of the government in The Walking Dead is that the all the employees of the CDC all committed suicide rather than work on the virus.
Wow.
So you have like one surviving scientist who eventually commits suicide as well. I mean, spoiler alert, but this is season one, we're in season six now, or five.
Right. I don't know that I'm ever going to sit through all the seasons.
Yeah, but
it's really interesting.
The interesting thing, too, about Walking Dead, and this goes for Breaking Bad and Mad Men, too. Did you guys know that the CEO of AMC came out as an anarcho-capitalist?
No.
Oh, I did not know that.
So I'll explain this after the break. I'll use the break to actually pull up the quote.
Okay. Worms.
Oh.
You and the hamster in your brain are listening to Freedom Fiends with Michael Dean and his weird friends.
When you shop online, please do it through the Freedom Fiends Amazon link over on the right side of freedomfiends.com. It won't cost you any extra, and the fiends will get a little taste from Amazon, and Amazon will save you the danger of drive-by stabbings at your local mall. Amazon sells pretty much everything you can buy on this earth, except for guns and weed. But they do sell the DVD Guns and Weed, The Road to Freedom. So get that for your gun-hating stoner brother or neocon gun nut dad. They'll thank you for it. That's freedomfiends.com. Freedom, Foxtrot, Echo, November, Sierra.com.
You've heard of shinybadges.com, but check out the new Causes tab. Every item includes a donation to a worthwhile Liberty Project. Buy the Silk Road pin to contribute to the Ross Ulbricht Legal Defense Fund. Or buy the Bitcoin Not Bombs t-shirt to contribute to Hoodie the Homeless 2014. Pick from many more. Go to causes.shinybadges.com and get yourself some quality Liberty products that not only start a conversation, but also put your money where your heart is. Plus, get a free gift when you pay with Bitcoin. causes.shinybadges.com.
Freedom Fiends. It's Michael Dean. I'm talking with Davi Worms Barker and MK Lords. And the topic in this hour is zombies and such, but the next hour, it's going to be about finding your place in the world and making a living doing what you love, but even more than that, just doing what you love and how to get there and how we've done what we do and how you can do what you do. So, Davi, Zombie Barker. Anyone ever call you Zombie Barker?
No, but that's interesting.
I like it.
I could go with that. Maybe Zombie Davi would be better.
I like Zombie Barker.
I like my first name better than my last name, but I could get used to it.
Davi Zombie. Okay, Davi Zombie, tell me what you were going to tell me about the AMC guy, the guy who runs the Zombie Network, all zombies, all the time.
Yeah, so this guy's name is Josh Sapan. I'm not sure if I'm pronouncing that right, but he's the CEO of AMC. AMC is the company that put out Breaking Bad and Mad Men and Walking Dead, which are all full of these sort of libertarian themes. And it was about a year ago at an event called the Barclays Global Technology, Media, and Telecommunications Conference that he was – which is like, think about that. That's not a fan convention. That's not a liberty convention. That's like a bunch of media moguls getting together and discussing the industry, right?
Yeah.
But he said this when he was asked about The Walking Dead. He said, "We've just begun to find out what the post-apocalyptic world is like, so that we'll be sitting here at Barclays Conference in 2022 discussing the fact that Walking Dead is still not over. At that point, I think any one of these companies will have replaced the U.S. government and will be in a completely free enterprise world in which there are no nation states."
That's a nice ANCAP sentiment, but it's also interesting that he said a corporation would replace the government, because that's the anti-good trope in a lot of not too distant future sci-fi from the 70s, like Rollerball, for instance. And it's not it's never a good thing.
I mean, he says one of these companies. I think if you picked his brain, he would admit that it would be a decentralized network of companies of some kind, right? But the point is, first off, he's saying this in a way that is vague. Because he's sort of saying at that point, someone will have replaced the United States government, which is a description of reality, because the U.S. government's already gone in Washington.
Well, it's really good to be vague with predictions of the future, because then if you're not dead on, people, one of my favorite predictions of the future was Jello Biafra from Dead Kennedys in like 19 in the, the punk band Dead Kennedys, who were very anti-government before any of this talk radio was happening, in like 79, 80. He said in an interview, "If any member of my band Dead Kennedys is ever found dead of a drug overdose, a car crash, or an apparent suicide, there's probably a government agency behind it." What a great prediction to make, because first of all, it hasn't happened yet, and I'm the only person who remembers that he said that. It was in some fanzine or something. But if that had happened, everybody would have found that and reposted it, and like, it must be a
preemptive conspiracy theory.
Yeah, and he probably didn't know at the time that at the time their drummer was a coke, heroin, and speed addict, so there probably was a good chance he was going to die of a drug overdose.
Right. But what I love about this is that he's also telling us the trajectory that he wants The Walking Dead to take, and so he's going to show us this post-apocalyptic world evolving into a free enterprise world with no nation states. And if you read the comic book, there are definitely themes of that coming up in the next couple of seasons. And so, like, if you think about that, this is a guy, he's the CEO of this big company, and he has these libertarian anarchist themes or leanings. And so Breaking Bad sort of becomes this macho libertarian flash against the drug war. And Mad Men sort of appears like this macho libertarian flash against the demonization of capitalism. And The Walking Dead is this macho libertarian flash against the very concept of the nation state. It's this community of people who, despite being in extreme peril, don't need a nation state.
The CEO in – oh, go ahead, MK?
I was going to say, all of those themes are really in contrast to what you see in a lot of other programming. I mean, you see, at least I've noticed, I haven't had a TV in a while, but I, you know, I see
the government's the hero in most shows.
Yeah, you see like a lot more cop shows and stuff, and a lot more like lawyer DHS cop shows, things. It's like, yeah, all of these different cop shows. It's like, look, these people are protecting us and stuff. And it's always, you know, it's really weirded me out in the past couple of years seeing stuff like that. So I'm glad to kind of hear that there's some, you know, kind of pushback and, you know, more creative programming.
All right, we'll be back for hour two of the Freedom Zombie Fiends after this trip to the free market and then some news to tell you the latest in zombie news and communicable disease news, which is often a trope in zombies, I think. Is it, Dobby?
It's definitely communicable.
Okay, worms. What?
The Central Scrutinizer is a Soviet-style Leviathan trying to keep track of all you do. That's why I use a VPN, or virtual private network, from Bola VPN. Bola VPN is inexpensive, secure, and will allow you to use your computer without leaving a trail. Bola VPN is now also offering torrent seed boxes for safely sharing media with the world. And if you open a support ticket saying you heard about them from the Freedom Fiends, they'll add 3 extra days free. That's Bola VPN at BOLEHVPN.net.
My fellow sheep, election season is upon us. Are you one of the 12% of Americans who still approves of our government? Then we need your help to force the other 88% into compliance. Our democracy depends on it. We're an organization called Citizens Against Too Much Unfettered Freedom, or CATMUF. CATMUF is a bipartisan flock of sheep whose goal is expanding government until nothing else remains. Because the government is here to help you. How can you help CATMUF help you? By only voting for candidates dedicated to expanding government. It's easy. You don't need to study the issues. No matter what a politician says when running for office, they're all dedicated to expanding government. And make sure you tell all your friends and family to vote for more government. Here at CATMUF, we don't care if you vote Democrat or Republican, as long as you vote for candidates committed to growing our federal family. CATMUF. Because folks just aren't smart enough to handle real freedom.
This is Michael Dean from the Freedom Fiends. When I needed a robust and secure home business computer network for my radio show, I hired QPG.us. QPG.us did a great job with a complex custom setup and did it remotely over the internet. Whether you have one computer or 1,000, QPG.us can set up your small business network, no matter where in the world you live, fast and at a reasonable price. QPG.us is a liberty-loving company that can also help you with networking, domain name registration, DNS, email, SSL, VPNs, and more. That's QPG.us. Freedom Fiends, late night talk radio musical extravaganza. I am your host, Michael W. Dean, broadcasting live and worldwide from a windowless bunker at an undisclosed location in the rural wild mountain west in the occupied states of America. We also have Mr. Davi Barker. Are you there? Are you safe? Have you been contacted by the government?
I have not been contacted by the government. I am safe. I'm good. And I am prepped and ready.
Prepper. I'm a prepper. And we did some prepping before this segment. And MK Lords, are you prepped?
Meow.
Yes. So I wanted to, well, first I think I'm required by law, since it is talk radio. I don't know if it's a law. It's just to be polite.
It's a custom.
To be polite, I will say once an hour that Obama is a liar. He's a socialist and his feet stink. And all politicians are horrible. All current, past, present, future politicians, they just want to kill you and take your money or have you in a tiny crate running on a hamster wheel 23 hours a day. That's the plan. And if it's not the plan, it's certainly the end game of the increasing nature of government. Hey, have you guys seen that that webpage on Facebook that Lucander Fien is involved with, and I think our friend Tom also, called The Campaign for a Longer Leash?
I have come across that. I think it's great.
Yeah, it's basically making fun of the idea of trying to vote your way to more freedom. And it's got a lot of meme pictures of dogs with funny sayings about voting.
I don't always vote, but when I do, it's for a longer leash.
Yeah.
Aww.
So I wanted to talk about being all you can be, and I'm not talking about the army. I'm talking about the army of one, the mental militia of one, or of small ad hoc groups that form and dissolve, or long-term partnerships of art. I don't really like the word art. I'm going to rephrase that. Of creation, of creativity, of making stuff and making the world a better place. You know, you think about going all the way back to, you know, the first humans, you know, the cavemen, or, you know, some people, you know, 6,000 years ago, it's for some people. But, you know, the first humans at some point had to figure out how to do stuff, or they would have just been lying in a ditch pushing berries up their nose. And probably the first thing they did was make shelter. And then, you know, some kind of weapon to go get food and fend off other people that would try to take their stuff. You know, the proto,
something like a club.
The proto-government. Yeah, a club, then a spear, then an arrow, then firearms. But all of that involved the good part of the hamster in your brain. And Davi and I have discussed this before, you know, of not letting that beautiful thing that humans have that most animals don't have and higher primates only have in really small amounts, the ability to solve complex problems and turn it into art and technology and science and literature and better ways of doing things for all of humankind. And sometimes that involves performance. I've always been fascinated with getting up in front of a crowd and doing things when I was younger, at a very young age. And at this age, I really don't care. I certainly don't need to be in front of a crowd seeing them do it, you know. But I really like the idea of people listening to what I'm doing. And I don't think I'm special and, you know, God's unique snowflake or anything like that. I think I'm a small but important part of the whole, but probably a more important part of the whole than a lot of people out there, but not nearly as important as other people. And usually the people that think they're really important aren't. So you can discount anything I'm saying. But, you know, I've done a lot of stuff in my day. What did I first do? I played in rock bands starting at about age 16 and, you know, got to the point where I was in a couple of cool bands that put out some records and had some little cult followings and made a living at it for a couple of years and made a partial living at it for 3 or 4 more years and toured the world and toured the gin mills of the world. And then got into computer stuff and started writing. I was always into writing. As soon as I could read, I was writing. And then got into filmmaking and then got into talk radio. And at this point, I want to have more and more people listening, and I care less and less, not only what they think, but even that they tell me what they think. We encourage people not to email us. We encourage people not to comment. And we like people to share this stuff on social networks, but not in any way that really has to involve us. So the first time I performed, you know, other than like singing a song at Christmas when I was 5 or 6, you know, in the living room for the family or something, was when I was 7 at the state fair. Not really the state fair, it was this thing called Midway in upstate New York. It's kind of like a permanent state fair, kind of an amusement park on the lake and in western New York. And they had this thing where it was like a guy was kind of being a barker, like step right up and do the ring toss or do this or do that. And he was doing a bunch of different stuff. And one was, if you get up and sing a song, you win a prize. And I jumped to do it. I pushed my hand up. I want to do it. I want to do it. I want to do it. And I got up and I sang a Partridge Family song. And I didn't sing it all that well. Later I became a pretty good singer. I was in choirs, church choirs, you know, school choirs. But you know, I just liked to sing from a really young age, and I sang this whole Partridge Family song, probably not very well, but, they handed me a prize, and the prize was a Dudley Do-Right board game, the Dudley Do-Right board game. And basically it was so validating to me because it was like, I performed, people clapped, and then I was paid. And I was like, I want to do this the rest of my life. So that was my genesis of talking and singing and performing. So what was yours, MK?
So mine wasn't a paid gig the first time I ever performed, but I was 5 years old, and I mentioned the hula hoop thing earlier, and that actually came out of a pretty long dancing career that I'd kind of had. I started dancing when I was five, doing ballet, and we would do recitals every year in this dance group that I was a part of, and that was the first time I'd ever been on stage, and I don't remember anything about the performance, and this has actually kind of been a recurring theme in a lot of the things I've done. I ended up switching over to jazz and later tap. I did musical theater, stuff like that. And I have a hard time remembering being on stage and what exactly was said. I could remember my lines just fine, stuff like that. But when I'm on there, I almost go into another world. It's really interesting. I have a hard time really remembering what happened. I get such a rush. And it's kind of weird because I'm probably more introverted in person. And a lot of people think that if you're involved in performing, that you're a pretty extroverted personality type. And I don't think that's necessarily true for me. I mean, I kind of go into my own world and I literally won't be able to remember sometimes what even happened on stage. I started performing when I was five. I would do like little dance recitals every year. And then I got into writing, as you mentioned, too. I loved reading as a kid. I just would read so much, and that translated into writing later on. I would write little short stories and things like that. So a lot of different ways, I've kind of found to express myself. So I'm really happy that I was able to pursue those really early on. I think arts are really great for kind of, stimulating the minds of children and stuff like that. And in a lot of ways they were a refuge for me. So started really early on, and throughout my life I've kind of been involved in a variety of different performance arts.
Cool. Zombie Barker.
So I kind of come from a performance oriented family, at least socially. My mother and my uncle would always play music at any sort of family gathering. My dad is very much a comedian and sort of an oral storyteller. And the earliest sort of performance I can remember doing is when we used to go on hikes or really anywhere, I would perform impromptu documentaries about whatever we were looking at. Even if I didn't know anything about the topic, I got very sort of good at authoritatively describing fanciful ways that things came into being.
Like the docent in a museum or a walking tour would do?
Yeah, like strange. I remember especially there was a hike called the Garden of the Gods, which was in some desert somewhere. And it was like these really bizarre rock formations that were in reality caused by sort of water over time. But I would sort of describe these like monsters that created them or windmills that blew them into place or like just weird. And I would present it like a documentary. And then, writing, I was into writing fan fiction from a young age of like Star Trek or comic books or things like that. And then my first performance on stage was I was the Cowardly Lion in a production of The Wizard of Oz in elementary school. And, it's funny, Megan, what you said about extroverts and introverts, it's really like so true because I think of myself in my own mind as more of an introverted person, but performing is a way of being exhibitionist as an introverted person because things are rehearsed. And so like because I've prepared, because I'm to some extent rehearsed, I feel safer being more of an extrovert in that context. And I think maybe that's part of it.
The best actors introverts, I think. I think the only Fiends co-host of the 12 or 13 or 14 or 15, depending on how you're numbering them right now, I think the only extrovert is Derek J. I think the rest of us are all introverts. And I've even asked a few of them. They're like, yeah. And people think that introvert means wallflower, and it really doesn't. It just means that you feed off human energy different than an extrovert. An extrovert gets energy from humans, and an introvert gets energy from themselves and gives it to humans, and they want to be really careful who they waste it on.
Yeah, that's exactly right. Because for me, performance doesn't feel like getting something from the crowd. Performance feels like giving something to the crowd.
Robert Downey Jr. Absolutely. Is absolutely an extrovert. I've worked with him on a documentary that I was making and spent a couple hours with him. And Robert Downey Jr. is definitely, did I say extrovert? I meant introvert. He is definitely an introvert, really calm and reserved. And, when he's not on stage. And I think that the best actors usually are like that. I mean, I think a lot of them, especially too, I think when they get older and get off their substance problems. I was an extrovert when I was drinking. I think that a lot of introverts drink because it makes them able to be an extrovert.
I would definitely agree with that.
I concur with that, sure. It was about sort of overcoming some social phobias that I had at the time.
So what kind of acceptance I want to ask about what kind of acceptance or rejection you've gotten from families and friends and teachers over the years. But first I want to ask really quickly, give me a thumbnail sketch, just 2 or 3 minutes each. We're about to go to a break, but I want to, when we come back and you guys can think about this, I want to basically have you guys give a really thumbnail sketch of your artistic and creative career from that first performance to this morning in 3 or 4 minutes each. And then we'll talk about rejection and acceptance when we get back. Worms. Zombie worms.
You're listening to Freedom Fiends with Michael Dean and his weird friends, tasing you with liberty since 2011. Learn more at freedomfiends.com.
Hey, this is Nathan Explosion from Death Clock, and you're listening to Freedom Fiends on the radio. Worms.
Hey, this is Squiscar Squiggles from Death Clocks, and you are listening to the Freedom Fiends on the, you know, the radios. And I guess it says worms now, so there you go.
You've read books, attended lectures, and you know the Constitution well enough to know it's a well-crafted blueprint to create an ever-increasing federal empire. But there's still one thing missing.
Buttons!
Freedom Fiends now has buttons. You'll get state speech is hate speech, guns and weed, buy sheep for sheep on sheep, and 2 designs for the Freedom Fiends. Wear them with pride. Use them to start conversations with statists. It's only $10 for 5 buttons, including shipping. Go to freedomfiends.com and click on the link at the top that says buttons.
What does freedom mean? Tune in to LRN.FM to find out. LRN.FM is the Liberty Radio Network, a collection of live talk radio and podcasts, all coming from a principled pro-liberty perspective. LRN.FM show hosts aren't left, right, or conspiracy kooks. You can tune in 24/7 to LRN.FM via your phone, computer, satellite, and more. Listen free anytime at LRN.FM. That's LRN.FM.
Freedom Fiends. Freedom Fiends.
Meow.
This is Michael Dean talking to Dobby Barker and MK Lords. And this is the section of the therapy quest section. I don't want to sound like I'm psychotherapizing you guys without permission or, you know, like sidelining you to do that on the air, because I've had that done to me by a prominent libertarian weirdo who's, I don't know, I don't even know if he's a libertarian, but I didn't like it. So anybody can not participate in any of this if they don't want. I will say that. And you will still be allowed to participate in the class. All right, so I'm going to give the Reader's Digest condensed version of the Michael Dean journey to from that first time I sang for my supper or sang for a Dudley Do-Right board game to, let's say, this morning. So I was 7. I was a hyperactive. I guess they called it hyperactive. It probably would have been ADD now. They would have drugged me, but that was before they were drugging kids for that, thankfully. So I always liked music. When I was 11, let's see, when I was 7, my parents got divorced, lived with my mother, barely knew my dad after that. My siblings were all older and were off at college. I barely know them. Let's say I started singing. I was in church choirs and school choirs and got pretty good at singing. And then started playing guitar when I was 14 and got shipped off to a boarding school when I was 14. An all-boys boarding school in Pennsylvania called the Church Farm School, and it was church and farm and school. And it was actually better than being in public school because the kids were a little smarter, and I don't know if I'd say the discipline was heavier. I mean, I guess the rules were heavier, but it was easier to break them than in public school. Like, you couldn't cut class, but you could get away with a lot because there were only a certain number of teachers watching all the kids, so we could do whatever we wanted. And I went there until I was 17, learned to play guitar. I got really good by the time I was like 17. I mean, when I was like 17, I played guitar and people's jaws would drop. And I'm pretty much not any better now at 50 than I was at 17. and now there's like whiz kids on guitar because you have YouTube and people like, I'll show you how to play this. And, you know, they can slow it down and things like that. And back then, if I wanted to slow a song down to learn it, I had to put the 33 record on and play it on 16 because record players existed and had a 16 setting back then. But, you know, not to get too much into when I was your age. And I learned to do a bunch of different art, not at expert level, but pretty well. Using old school technology. I learned to take pictures and develop them in a dark room. I learned to do the same thing with Super 8 film cameras when I was 15. I was multi-tracking things by taking two tape recorders and playing and then playing it back and recording it into another one. I got kicked out of the boarding school when I was 17, and I'd been playing in some bands in that school and at home during the summer. And when I got kicked out, I went to college when I was 17 and got a high school diploma through college. And then when I went for another year and flunked out, and then I moved to Virginia and or DC, then Virginia, then San Francisco, then LA, then got married and moved to Wyoming. And I love it here. And somewhere in there, I got signed to Warner Brothers and then got dropped from Warner Brothers and, toured the world playing the gin mills of the world. And, got a really serious heroin habit and then kicked everything in 94 and haven't had a drug or a drink since, and kind of had to reinvent myself. There was like from like 94 to like the year 2000, I was relearning how to do everything. Like I didn't want to just go out and try to be in a band again. So I got a computer, in like, you know, 91, and by 96, I was like doing web design and went back to college and actually learned some stuff. Basically went to like secretary classes for a year and learned how to do a job interview and learned how to like function in the world, in the real world, which I'd never really learned. Then I started making digital films like in, you know, 99 before YouTube, and then started writing books and started getting them published by major publishers, and then started podcasting in 2006 and worked toward getting on radio. A lot of people go from radio back to podcasting when they lose their radio job, but I did it the other way around. And as far as I know, this is the only radio show syndicated that started as a podcast. And you know, basically a lot of it was just like getting the demons out of my own head, and you know, not the demons, but like getting the anger and the self-pity, you know, that like ex-drug addicts always have out of my head and working on it to the point of becoming a happy person. Marrying a really great woman at like age 41 or 42, like way after most people get married, after I'd like worked all the spunk out of my system, all the like, I must conquer the world and its women, worked that out of my system. And I'm pretty happy and pretty mellow, and I do this radio show 7 days a week, and that leads up to this morning. And when we get back, we'll hear the same type of story from, or the same lineage from Davi and MK. Worms.
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 Shiny badges on your jacket, shiny badges.
This is Davi Barker from shinybadges.com, and I just want to personally apologize for airing a jingle week after week, month after month, that turned out to be such an infectious brain worm. So to make it up to you, I'm offering a free gift. The next time you make a purchase at shinybadges.com, write worms in the transaction comments, and I'll send you something weird.
You're listening to Freedom Fiends. Go to freedomfiends.com to help keep it drone-proof.
Freedom Fiends. Davi Barker.
Yes.
Davi Barker, tell me about your journey from that first time you performed to this morning. 5 minutes or less, please.
Sure. So, like I said, I grew up in a weird family. And so my sort of developmental years were very sort of, I was free to be myself, however I wanted to perform, whatever Hippie. Kind of art I wanted to do, that was okay. And it was accepted. And then I entered into public school and encountered a number of teachers with some sort of memorable shaming experiences, like calling me up to the front of the room.
Without the government, who would shame the brilliant artists?
Yeah, exactly. So to this day, my spelling is terrible, and here's why. Because at a very young age, a teacher called me up to the front of the room, asked me to spell something in front of the class she knew I didn't know how to spell, and had everybody laugh at me. And from then on, for the rest of the sort of spelling portion of my education, I used to write the words on my desk and never study how to spell anything because I wanted to get perfect scores on the spelling tests. Anyway, so in high school, it was a large enough school that I discovered that there were other weird kids. And that was when I started coming out of this shell. And I especially, I got a guitar when I was 13 and learned to play, although it was sort of intimidating because I was competing with other musicians in my family, which was pretty far away from where I was. So never really got good or never got as good as them. But I got into role playing. And I used to play Vampire the Masquerade and Werewolf the Apocalypse and these sorts of games. And these were like not like Dungeons and Dragons rolling dice on tables, but actual like live action, putting on a costume, improvising a character, and engaging with about 100 players on like a college campus. And this put me in contact with players who were older and more mature than me, or probably as mature than me, but older than me. But also it got me into the process of developing a character and a story arc and getting good at that. And it made history relevant to me too. So this is when I sort of got into the idea of researching real history, adapting real history to a story and creating historical fiction. And I went from role-playing to writing, and I wrote a lot of little funny novel fragments and things. And in college, I was self-publishing all kinds of zines, and some of them were journalism.
What's a zine?
A zine is essentially a magazine made at Kinko's or any sort of copy mat. You write it out, and you fold it and staple it, and you do everything by hand with love and care and hand it out to people, usually for free. And if you break even, you've succeeded. And I did a student magazine for a solid year. There were 13 issues, and there were probably 5 regular contributors and probably a dozen over the course of the year. And that like sort of taught me to work deadlines and be diligent and do what you say you're going to do and fulfill orders and develop merchandise and all these sort of things that became, once I gave up the 9-to-5 job, my calling in life, right? To produce art, to sell art, to market art. And to produce it at a level that I'm really doing merchandise and I'm really, trying to make a living at it as opposed to just breaking even. And so, yeah, I went from the magazine to blogging. I went from blogging for free on like LiveJournal early on to blogging at Examiner.com, which paid me a little bit. And then on to Daily Anarchist and Silver Circle. And these were sort of paid social media and blog jobs that I had, which actually gave me sort of an income, a second income to my main job. And then my main job at the time was production art. I was working for a screen printing company, which is also where I learned a lot of my production art skills now, like a lot of my branding stuff and a lot of my, you know, I screen print now, I make merchandise now. A lot of those skills I learned at this job doing ad specs. And so, you know, when I lost that job, I was laid off. I had been studying libertarianism and especially agorism for a number of years. And I just decided that it was sort of like it was time to, like, you know, take what I was saying and advocating seriously and become a full-time entrepreneur. And I've been doing that for like 2 years. And, you know, now I've written 3 books. I wrote Voluntary Islam on libertarianism and Islam, Authoritarian Sociopathy on the Psychology of Authority, and Survivor Max, which is my first published fiction, which is a zombie story.
Published by someone else, you mean? Because you self-published the other ones,
I
right?
I mean, like published, like available on Amazon and in a sort of paperback, perfect-bound book from a publisher, exactly. As opposed to all the Kinko stuff that I'd done. And I'd done a number of sort of booklets and things that were fiction before. My bestseller was Athens, Texas, which was the story of God appearing in a small church in Athens, Texas in a bolt of lightning and sort of becoming man and living among these small town folks, which was, you know, I don't know, maybe I'll publish that and it'll be available somewhere, but that was pre-internet, so... and you know, now I'm a full-time writer, full-time artist, and I freelance for myself.
Cool, man. Cool. Yeah. You and I are different than a lot of people do in Liberty Media in that we had the media, like good quality media production part of it, like hands down done as soon as we discovered the idea of liberty. So, you know, as soon as I discovered the idea of liberty, I'm like, well, I'm going to do that podcast from now on. And my first, you know, the first episode of Freedom Fiends sounded better than like the most recent episode of a lot of podcasts by libertarian bigwigs. Cause, and you know, like you knew how to write a book and make a sentence and stuff and put a whole book together before you even started thinking about writing about liberty. That's pretty cool, yeah, man. And we're really into like passing these ideas on to other people. Like I do, Davi and I did a video, and Davi helped me on how to do a podcast. If you go to creamyradioaudio.com, it's pretty much everything I know there for free on how to make a good podcast and even a good radio show. So, MK Lords, what's your journey?
So I was talking earlier about performers being associated with a more kind of extroverted personality, and I really think there's kind of a sliding scale there. But I do remember being a child and being a lot more extroverted than I am now and a lot more outgoing and social. And it took a few kind of major embarrassments as a child to kind of like tone that down. And I became very introverted as a result. But you mentioned the drugging thing earlier. In second grade, they actually did try to put me on Ritalin because they said that I had ADHD because I had a hard time concentrating in class. I would be like doodling and stuff on, you know, in the margins, and just, I made good grades because like I figured out how it worked and how the system kind of worked and what I needed to do. But, you know, I wasn't always super focused in class. I would be reading something else or drawing something or, you know, a little distracted. Thankfully, they did not succeed in putting me on drugs, which I'm really thankful for.
Did your parents fight it?
Yes, actually. My mom fought pretty strongly against that. So that was definitely a good thing. So I did dance for a long time. That's what I started in. And when I got to middle school, my mom grew up in kind of like the jock side of things. She was very good at sports. My dad was very much a musician. His whole side of the family was musicians. And she really wanted me to get involved in sports. And instead, I became a band geek. So I wasn't good at sports. I was always really short and, you know, I'm not that much of a team sports kind of person. So I did the band thing instead. So I learned to play clarinet, and I also picked up towards the end of that guitar and bass a little bit too. I ended up playing in a band. I guess I would have been 15 or 16. I played bass in a band for a while. I never got really good at instruments. I kind of jumped around a little bit too much to really focus on one of them. And then there's kind of like what Davi said, there's my dad's side of the family was a bunch of musicians, so it was a little intimidating. They were all, you know, really good. And so I never quite, you know, focused on the music aspect. I still got a ton of instruments, you know, around. My husband's a musician. So that's really cool. I love being around it. But I focused more on writing and acting, especially as I got into high school. I started doing musical theater and different types of theater. I had a really fun time with that. I really think it helped me kind of develop speaking skills that I would use later on when I speak at conferences and when I do my show, too. I really think it kind of helped with communication a lot and with crowd fears, too. Like, I do have, you know, a little bit of anxiety when it comes to crowds, kind of on an interpersonal sense, but when I'm speaking in front of a larger group, it's not that much of an issue. I actually have more anxiety when it's smaller groups of people. So I think theater kind of helped me overcome stage fright in that way. So that was really an interesting time. And I kind of took a break after I graduated high school. I moved out really young. I was the first of my friends to move out. I moved out the day before I turned 18 and ended up quitting a lot of the stuff I'd been involved in as far as theater. I was going to be a theater major, but I ended up becoming an English major instead and focusing on writing. I didn't do as much dancing. So it took about a 5-year break or so until I discovered hula hooping. I saw a girl hooping at a festival. So I was really heavy into the festival scene at this time too, which is it's really interesting the way they incorporate art into so many aspects of it. I really enjoyed that. So there's a lot of dancing. There's like live painting and fire performance and stuff like that. So I saw a girl hula hooping and I was like, that's really interesting. That kind of seemed like some of the dance I used to do when I was younger. Maybe I could learn it. I ended up becoming friends with her and she gave me a hoop and I started making them and performing. And I didn't know that there was a term for what I was doing at the time, which was agorism. Basically, it was a part-time form of agorism.
What is agorism? Explain that, please.
So agorism is basically making your own living. You're not paying taxes to the state necessarily, but you're bolstering the counter economy.
And not have, and not getting permits for things too is a big
not getting permits. Yeah, is a part of that. You know, you're not engaging agents of the state in your livelihood. And I just knew, even though I was just kind of basic libertarian at this point, I just kind of knew that maybe the state can have my labor, but I don't want to let them have my art. So that's where kind of hooping came into it. I would start performing, and I started making hoops too. I would make custom hoops for people, for my friends, and then that ended up becoming pretty successful. I was doing that on the side as far as serving, because I had dropped out of college at this point too. That was about the time that I picked up hooping. I just started making hoops, and I ended up coming into some financial issues, and I couldn't afford to pay for college, and I didn't want to go into debt. So I ended up dropping out of college, and to supplement my income as a server, I started performing. So that kind of got me back into the dancing aspect of it. And I had been writing this whole time too, and doing poetry. I used to do a lot of open mics. So I would do spoken word poetry. So that was always a very cathartic feeling. And I, you know, I really want to get back into that too. I was kind of ironically, I was a socialist at the time that I was doing a lot of the open mic poetry.
Ew.
I know. So I backlashed into socialism from a very far-right military town that I grew up in. So, you know, as a teenager, you want to do kind of the edgy thing. The edgy thing in Pensacola to do is backlash into socialism. I did that for a while.
I think the edgy thing now for young people should be not being a socialist.
Yes.
So, Davi.
Absolutely.
So Davi, MK and I have some college but don't have any degree because we were smart enough to get out and not get into all the college debt. Do you have a degree, Davi? Did you go to college?
Yeah, I have a bachelor's in fine art with a minor in creative writing.
Really? I didn't know. Mm-hmm. All right. We'll be back with the redemption in the third act about dealing with adversity after this trip to the free market.
Listening to Freedom Fiends. So much truth, it hurts.
This show survives on donations from fiends like you. We put that money back into our show and Liberty Outreach and donate most our ad space to Liberty organizations that make a difference. We're also a teaching hospital, educating the next generation of Liberty talkers on the skills needed to keep the radio flame of truth burning into the future. Put your money where your heart is and make a donation of any amount to the Freedom Fiends. Please go to freedomfiends.com and click on the spinning coin on any post.
Creamy Radio Audio. Want caviar sound on a cat food budget? Creamy Radio Audio by the Freedom Fiends has great free tips so you can sound like a pro without spending like one. The most powerful form of human communication is one person speaking to another. But if people have to suffer through your sound, they'll change the channel and miss your message. With articles on microphones, preamps, recorders, mastering, recording remotely over the internet, doing a podcast, even getting a show on actual radio, the Freedom Fiends show you what they use and where to get it. Whether you're a talk show host, voiceover artist, podcaster, evangelist, or just want to record your loved ones for the ages, at Creamy Radio Audio, the Freedom Fiends will help you make the most of your sound. Creamy Radio Audio will help you speak to the world with sound that will make people want to keep listening. Check out creamyradioaudio.com. That's creamyradioaudio.com.
Freedom Fiends. All right. Redemption in the third act on finding your own way in the world. So I'm going to give four examples of adversity I've dealt with throughout my life. My first day of school, kindergarten, I showed up able to read. I was the only kid in the class that could read. My mother taught me to read. I probably could have just gone to the library for 12 years and had a better education than I would have had dealing with idiots in schools. But first day of school, I picked up a little kindergarten level reading book and started reading it out loud to myself near the teacher so she could hear that I could read it. I was teacher's pet for a minute. And the teacher was like, wow, you can read. Do you want to get up and read in front of the class? And I'm like, absolutely. I guess this was the first time I performed and did not get rewarded. I got up and read, and afterwards kids picked on me and threatened to beat me up for being a smarty pants because I could read. And yeah. I ignored them and just read anyway. So fast forward to like, you know, 11th grade, I was really good in English class, not so good in the rest of the classes. I was very good in English class. Let me correct that. And I had one teacher, you know, all the teachers were just control freaks, except one who was kind of a hippie. He was probably a leftist. I don't know. I never asked him about his politics, but he was socially concerned and he was very intelligent and he was a teacher I liked. And he encouraged me a lot. I got very good at writing essays. And he told me, you could be a professional writer, except you can't spell. And I didn't know word processors and spell check were coming, but I was just like, that doesn't matter. I'm going to make a living anyway. And for the past 12 years, I've made at least one third of my income from writing. So I proved him wrong because computers came along to save my butt. My parents were not very supportive of my music. They liked when I played acoustic guitar around the house and sang pretty songs, but they didn't like the ugly music I was playing in rock and roll bands. And the only time they ever like acknowledged that it was a good thing was when I got signed to Warner Brothers. My dad, who's a classic capitalist, but kind of a closed-minded one, not an open-minded one, was like, oh, you're successful now, because a major corporation listed in the NASDAQ had approved me, you know, so that made my dad like it. And I never really cared what my parents thought because I was smarter than them. So, and then, you know, lately, like on a daily basis, ever since I've been on the internet, I've been expressing my opinions and having people who have closed minds telling me I'm wrong about things. That happens on an almost daily basis. And I delete them and block them. I don't care. They're wrong. I'm not going to waste time arguing with them. So Davi, you've never had any adversity. No, you've had a little. Go ahead.
Nope, never, ever. So, yeah, I guess, you know, it kind of, you could sum it up as just learning not to respect the opinion of people stupider than me.
Yeah.
And that has been peers, that has been teachers, that has been professors, that has been, you know, other people in the world. And, I mean, other than that, I mean, I don't really know what it is. It's that at some point I decided not everybody's opinion matters.
Yeah.
But I'd say probably the most sort of reaction or the most sort of aggression I've seen from people is the hate mail that I got when I first started writing sort of professionally. And but that's the same thing. Like I don't really believe the threats are credible, and so it's the same phenomenon. I just stopped caring what their opinion was.
Yeah, I don't think you have to be afraid of the people that send you death threats. I think you have to be afraid of the people you never hear from. They're more dangerous. There's a few of them out there, I'm sure. MK.
Yeah, so I was picked on a lot as a kid. You know, I was always kind of a weird kid, kind of an outcast weirdo. But when I got into high school, I really, you know, I found the rest of my weirdo friends. And it was really awesome experience. And one of the things I ended up doing my senior year was writing for the newspaper. And they let me write the rant, which was my favorite thing ever, because I got to rant about whatever was bothering me at the time, which as a teenager is like everything. So it was really great. But I got kicked off of it because I wrote an article about Valentine's Day that was too controversial. And
what was the thesis?
Well, I started referring to Valentine's Day in a kind of abbreviated version of VD for the rest of the thing, which isn't really original or anything.
This has been the Freedom Fiends, and hope you've enjoyed it. And I just want to say, don't define success by what's in your wallet or by what people say, by what the general masses and idiots say. If you make something that the market likes, no matter how small a sliver the market likes it, you can get people to buy it and share it and love it. And that's what should define success, is that and being happy and breaking even. That's success. Anything past that is gravy. Thanks, Davi. Thanks, MK. It's been a great show, man. We'll have you back sometime, MK. You passed the audition.
Awesome.
Worms.
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 Worms.